Greetings and welcome to the Thirsty Mage, the podcast that's still trying to solve the great mystery of who keeps dumping their games into our backlogs. I'm your host for this one, the coffee-obsessed, foul-mouthed host, David Lloyd, and in this episode, we'll be discussing some recent detective games that we've been able to purge from our backlogs, as well as some others that have caught our eye, as we chat about the ongoing anime mystery renaissance that's currently ongoing. With me this episode is the Dr. Watson to my Herlock Sholmes. It's Jordan Rudick.
Well, it's elementary, my dear David. The reason why we can't get to our backlogs is because we keep expanding the number of genres we're playing. Like, we refuse to just be confined to traditional turn-based RPGs. And as soon as we add, you know, action and mystery and narrative and stuff like that, we're eternally hooped. So I think that's definitely part of the solution anyways.
Yeah, well, I'm not really an action RPG fan. I don't mind it, but it's been kind of funny because the last few games have all been action RPGs, so it's been a bit of a run. So we'll see. I might have to like dive into a CRPG after this just to for change of pace or something. But
I mean, it's hard to be an RPG fan in 2023 and not, you know, be kind of inundated with games that want to either, you know, have action as their focus or have action elements and kind of just moving away from the turn-based style. Like, it's just, you know, that's what's going to happen with these blockbuster games is they're not going to be turn-based. And that's fine. It doesn't seem like we're not getting turn-based games anymore. We've covered so many. There's so many more that we're looking forward to. But yeah, there's also going to be just more and more action RPGs in the near and distant future. So, and some of these I'm really looking forward to, something like Ys 10. Like, I think that's going to be really good. Boundless Trails, we've got that in September. So we've got a Falcom game that's going, or sorry, I should say a Trails game that's now going kind of full action style as well. So even our beloved series, you know, our Final Fantasies, our Trails games are taking the plunge into the action sphere. So yeah, I'm here for it. Like, I think it's fine. It's not necessarily, you know, ideal from given the games that we grew up with, but yeah, some of these are really good. And it's also a chance to get into new series. Like the Ys games, I hadn't played any until 8, and it's an action RPG through and through, and I love that game. And 9 was good too. So
yeah, no, looking forward to those ones. Definitely, that seems to be the mainstream these days. Action RPG, everybody's kind of moving towards that. The turn-based stuff is definitely niche these days, but. It's funny, speaking of mainstream, I was actually, it's funny timing, we had chosen this, I think like a week ago with this topic or so, and I was just listening to Retronauts talk about the Ace Attorney franchise.
Yes, yes.
And about how the anime mystery games are just like taking off again.
For sure, yeah.
So you're seeing like we got the announcement that the Ace Attorney, like the latest trilogy, is coming to Switch in 2024, I believe it was.
Yeah, so that's 4, 5, and 6, which I guess kind of star, not Phoenix is there, but it's also another character, Apollo.
Yeah, kind Apollo of Justice.
Stage, right, yeah.
And then we got Square getting into the mystery genres with Paranormasite. We had an episode of that not too long ago, and then we got a couple today we're talking about, and there was even a couple more. It's funny that we're going to be talking about a game that's by the Danganronpa crowd, because I think another couple of games along those lines came out recently too. So it's funny. This is the, again, topic du jour, these mystery games just coming out full tilt.
I mean, you mentioned Capcom. They just came out with Ghost Trick. I really want to play that game. It just seems to receive universal praise. You know, this game, I think it was on the DS or 3DS originally, and everyone seems to adore it. I should at least play the demo just to kind of see a little bit more about what's up, but I want to play that at some point. Hopefully grab it on sale. Professor Layton is getting a revival of sorts. Like, there's another Professor Layton game. So these kind of narrative mystery style games. Yeah, you're right. To say it's a renaissance is absolutely on point. And I like these games. I kind of need a break between them. I can't play like multiple of these in a row. Because they're very dense, a lot of reading, you know, very story heavy, and that's all good. But when you play so many of those in a row, it does kind of feel. You definitely want like a platform or an action game after those to kind of mix it up a little bit. So after the one that I'm playing, I'm going to talk about shortly, I'll definitely want something, you know, like a Pikmin 4, like maybe I'll get back into Tears of the Kingdom as well. And I guess that's the funny thing about these games. I do love them, but you think about like picking up a Phoenix Wright trilogy. Like, I know you did this recently, right? You played like 1, 2, and 3 kind of back to back. Like, it's very hard for me to do something like that.
That was a long go. Definitely helped that I was doing it with my daughter. So it's,
yeah, that's always good.
You have somebody there who's keeping it going. But yeah, well, and some of them have like some pretty crazy stories and stuff. So it's when you get one, it's kind of a bit dangerous because you can kind of dull your senses to them if you get a few in a row. But I'm hoping along all these things too that Spike Chunsoft announces that AI3 is in the works too. That'd be a nice one to come around. I think we were probably another year or two away from it coming, but
I'd think so. I mean, what was it? Was it 2 years ago or was it maybe the beginning of last year when the sequel came out?
Yeah, like 20. I think the first one came in 2019, and then I think the sequel was either late 2021 or early 2022. I can't remember around that time or anyway. It seems like. Yeah. There have been every couple of years, so I think 2024 would be the absolute earliest. But if they even do a third one, I know I was kind of surprised to hear that they had
looks like June of last year. Jeez, I can't even believe it's June. Like, okay, sure, time is whatever now, but I don't know if that game ended with a cliffhanger or something like that. But these games seem to be selling and reviewing well, so it makes sense to do more of them. You know, and it does kind of seem to be their niche. You know, these horror tinged like mystery games. You know, with different kind of investigative elements. And again, I'm going to talk a little bit about that later. But I do want to hear about Lost Judgment because we talked about Judgment last year too, I think, and we were kind of like excited to get into that one after hearing good things and. You know, knowing that we already like the Yakuza games and there's a lot of similarity, a lot of crossover there. So
Lost Judgment was the game that I've been playing before Final Fantasy 16 came along. I was trying to sneak it in right before. I got most of the way through the game, but I'm not quite done yet, so I'll have to go back after. But I'm enjoying it. Like you said, we played the first Judgment game at some point last year. I remember playing that on Xbox. That was the I had actually thought I had bought it already, so I was on my phone downloading it to my Series X and not realizing that I had purchased it on my phone because there's this little loophole with the Series X where you can download the game to your Xbox from your phone before you buy it for some reason, and it's the only way you can do that. So I just assumed I had it because it's like, okay, well, it's let me download. So I guess I'll just go ahead and download it. And then I was like, oh, I guess I bought it. Oh, well. I enjoyed that when we played it. It was like you said, it's in that Yakuza vein where it's the action. It's basically it takes over for Yakuza if you're a fan of the action combat style.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Yakuza is now like a full turn based. But. Now we got Yagami, the detective who's, you know, walking around the streets of Kamurocho, solving crimes, and the ex-lawyer. Again, it was around the time I was playing Ace Attorney as well, so it was funny. There were so many references to things that I wouldn't have known if I hadn't have played Ace Attorney. Like, he kept showing the pin, the lawyer's pin, and you don't quite understand the significance of it. Mm-hmm. Unless you've like played some of these games where that really kind of explain how the Japanese legal system works.
Yeah.
So I feel like playing Ace Attorney before Judgment worked well in my favor because when they went to the courtroom scenes and when he was flashing badges and talking about being a lawyer, you kind of really understood what it meant in their kind of cultural context.
And I love how Yagami's kind of, he has that lawyer background and kind of turns it or uses it for his private eye business, I guess, his private investigator business. But then at the same time, you're like running into thugs on the street, just beating the crap out of them. Like, it's just a funny kind of combination that you get out of these Yakuza games where they combine like kind of slapstick comedy with like murder and more serious tones as well. And then, just running into people and just beating them up. Like, it's just this funny kind of juxtaposition of things, I guess, especially for Yagami, who was a former person like on the side of the law. And then he's doing very, extra legal or illegal things, depending on what it is. But
So Lost Judgment picks up after the first game where Yagami is still doing his detective thing. It pretty much follows the same formula to a T, really. Like, you basically have the combat system is pretty much exactly the same.
You know, you're still in Kamurocho, but there's another neighborhood that you end up going to as well. So there's a couple there. Starts off the same way in the sense where, you know, there's a small case or a small thing that Yagami is working on that basically expands bigger and bigger and bigger as the game goes on. So it's almost like a very local problem that turns into like this this big, like, you know, conspiracy sort of thing. And so the kind of the outline of the story without spoiling anything is that, so Yagami begins the game by investigating, there's kind of like this bullying epidemic or this school in this, neighborhood that's nearby, is concerned about bullying going on in the school. So, I'm blanking on the name of, in the first game, there was the brother of, Sugiyama.
That sounds right. That name sounds right or familiar.
Yeah. But he was,
drawing it from a Yakuza game too.
Yeah. So. So in the first judgment game, there was like a thief that ended up, becoming friends and helping Yagami with you know, complete, because it's hard to say how he's related to it without spoiling the first game, but anyway, there's this thief Sugiyama that from the first game, if you played it you'll know who it is, and he ends up helping out throughout the game or whatever, and so they're still friends when this game starts, but he actually starts his own detective agency in this other neighborhood in Japan. And
Sugiura, I think.
So yeah, that's Sugiura, it. Sugiura, yeah. And he starts it up with, I can't remember the tech guy's name, but there's the guy who was doing all the tech stuff in the first game from like a cafe. So him and Sugiura start this other detective agency in this other place, and a school hires them to investigate whether or not there's bullying going on in a school. And so Yagami, so they want Yagami to help because it's like this big lucrative case and they want to make sure they get it right or whatever. So he ends up helping, and it's turning into this thing where kind of beside that there is they find this body in a bit like a decrepit building of this kid that had been abducted, I think like 6 months ago. And it turns out that he was murdered by, so this kid that they found was accused of, it's so hard to explain without spoiling. he was accused of bullying a kid and the kid committing suicide. So the father of this kid that committed suicide had this vendetta against this guy, and so he captured him 6 months ago, and he ended up killing him 6 months ago. But the whole thing was, is at the same time he was on trial for groping a woman on a train. So as he's being convicted of the groping, he tells everybody about the body in this other building. And basically the whole point of all of this is that this guy was committing the murder at the time that the groping happened. So he was trying to like trick the justice system into being like, well, if you've convicted me for the groping while this guy was murdered, then I couldn't possibly be the murderer, right?
Sure.
And then like a week after that comes out and everybody's trying to figure it out, there's a video that goes out that shows this guy murder, like he videotaped himself murdering the guy, and he put it out on the internet. So now everyone knows, it's like, okay, he was the murderer. So now they're trying to figure out, well, how could he murder the guy and be on the train groping someone at the same time? And that's like basically like the plot of the story. And it's like taking all these weird turns, and they're learning new things, and there's new, while you're doing that, there's also like a new gang that's taking over Kamurocho with the Tojo clan having, you know, been basically decimated and disbanded after the events of the first game. So I wouldn't say you necessarily have to play the first game to enjoy this second game, but it definitely would help. Like, you definitely have a lot of background information on the people involved. You'd understand kind of like a lot of the context of stuff. So it's definitely worth playing the first game. But so far, I would say if you enjoyed the first game, you should enjoy the second game just by virtue of it's like almost basically like a, you know, a shot for shot version of the first game, just with a different story.
So with games like, with direct follow-ups like this, you know, where it obviously takes place in a very similar area, similar characters, all that stuff. Like, I'm always curious, like, how do they start you off? You know, because Yagami is obviously pretty, if you've played the first game, gets pretty powerful by the end. Like, how does this game kind of do the beginning, like, in terms of your progression? Are there new moves? Is the combat system different? Like, how are there any kind of those kind of gameplay differences, like the kind of nitty-gritty progression stuff that we get into?
It seems... To me, it seems identical to the first one, where it's like Yagami has a few different types of fighting styles. Like, there's one that's kind of designed for hand-to-hand or for one-on-one combat. There's one that's kind of made for taking on groups of people. So I have three of them right now, and they're like color-coded. Like, I think it's like red, yellow, and green. And it works the same way in the sense of like you get XP and then you unlock the different moves. So, I mean, I think there's different moves. I mean, some of it's the same from the first game. I think they've added a few new moves. Like, there's this one move that I'm totally abusing where you kind of like jump over the guy. You jump over an enemy, but then you can kind of do like a Hurricane Rana where he like flips him on his head, and it's almost like that. It's almost like an automatic kill sort of thing. So it's the fighting style feels exactly the same. Like, you can still buy healing items if you want to kind of brute force your way through anything. You just go, like, it's all the same. The map seems the same. Like, Camera Ultra seems the same. Like, you're still going to the Genda Law office. Like, you're still doing all the normal stuff from the first game. Yeah, you're just unlocking everything just like it was, but you're starting fresh. It's not like, you know, it's like you started the first. It's like I said, it's almost like they just redid the second game. Like a
sure.
Yeah, we're just gonna start over with a new something new to give them, but you know, we're kind of back to square one on the action RPG stuff.
Well, that makes it easier for people who didn't play the first game to get into it as well. You don't have to have any memory of like how the first game played or how the combat worked or anything like that. It kind of just start you fresh. So I think that's fine. I did want to ask about some of the things that we were hung up on with the first game a little bit, like some of the detective stuff, like the chasing and the investigation things. Like, is that different? Have they adjusted that at all, or is there more or less of it?
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. Okay. Like, there's still. I think the game actually starts. Literally starts with a chase scene, like where you're chasing a guy down. I don't remember. There's one thing that might have been added that I don't remember if it was in the first game or not. But there's when you're chasing the guy, sometimes there's items on the ground that you can kick at him to slow him down. So like you'll be running along and there'll be like a traffic cone, and if you hit X at the right time, you can hoof it at the guy, and if it hits him, then you don't have to run as long because it takes down his HP.
Okay, I don't really remember that. I remember you avoiding things with like QTE events, but I don't
that's still
like,
there.
Kind of impact them with like, you know, kicking or throwing something at them.
So that might be the new part there, but there's still like the investigation part is still pretty rudimentary, because it's like you'll be at an area and it's like, we'll investigate, and it's like, okay, I just move the cursor around, and then you know, he makes a little sound when he's like, oh, ooh, like when you're at the spot you're supposed to. I
can still hear that sound in my head when he does it. That's so funny.
Yeah. So it's that part's still pretty easy and stuff.
What about the one it just came to my mind, the one where you're kind of slowly kind of walking after, so you're stalking them basically. Like,
yeah, that's still in there too.
Yeah. I think that was the one that I got frustrated with the most, just because some of those were pretty long sequences. Yeah. If you mess it up or something, you have to start back at a previous point. It was a little annoying, but
yeah. I'm blanking on, his, lawyer, the lawyer, the female lawyer's name I'm blanking on.
Not Sayori. Is it Sayori?
Yeah. Sayori. So there's still another scene where she has to dress up as, to go into the, what do you call it, the host cafe or whatever,
she
has to be a host and stuff
like that. Sure.
Yeah, so there's like, for some reason she had to do that again.
So it's too popular of a segment from the original game, so
yeah.
I don't know. That's of course. What else was I going to ask about? The side quests or side stories. Like, have you done a bunch of those? I know that just with Studio RGG games, like some of the side quests are really, really entertaining, actually. So you really get into those, and kind of searching around the city and looking for them can be like this, you know, big, big time sink that actually ends up being pretty rewarding. I didn't know if any of those or done any of those.
Well, it's funny. So when he's investigating the school, he realizes that part of, like, so when the big murder thing happens and he's contracted to work on that, he realizes that the school that he was doing the bullying investigation at is a part of the bigger overall thing. Hmm. So he realizes he has to stay at the school, but he needs a reason to be there. So he has to become a teacher or like a guidance counselor or whatever.
Oh, that's so good. I love
yeah. that. So he becomes the guidance counselor of the mystery book club. And so that is like a side quest in itself. So he has to help. So the side quest is led by this girl who has, she has the most recognizable voice. And I can't even think of, who it is now, but she's in like Persona and Trails. And like, I can hear the voice, but I can't think of the name.
Yeah.
But she's kind of like this real go-getter, and so she's solving crimes that are happening around the school or whatever, and you have to help her and this other guy solve these mysteries around the school. So those are the side quests.
That I love that setup. I think that's really good. Again, just you're kind of like that fish out of water kind of thing with him. You know, like, yeah, you're so good at, like, you know, being a detective and being a lawyer and all that. Now we're going to put you somewhere completely different, and having some side quests centered around that, I think that's really good. I'm looking forward to playing this game more, hearing something like that. I mean, the whole school thing and there being a new mystery, I kind of expect that, but how does this, you know, impact the game and some of the extra stuff that you're doing? Because I get really into those. At least the first half of my playthrough of these games, I kind of try to do almost all the side quests, and you really get a good sense of, you know, what the extra content that they've put in. And so that sounds like a good one for sure.
Well, just as an example, one of the mysteries to solve is this. There's a time capsule buried on the school grounds somewhere, and these three guys I think they're there for their reunion or something, but they were the ones that buried it like 10 or 20 years ago, something like that. And they're trying to find it, and you need to get clues on where it's actually buried because they can't figure it out, but they have like a riddle of where they buried it. So he's like, Yagami's going around the school, like finding out about the people that buried it and finding out about the people that went to school at this time. So it kind of gives you a bit of a background to the school while also like figuring out the clues of like, okay, well, you know, they said that there's this big thing is over a tree and you need to take like five paces to the right of this tree and then you got to do this. And it was fun in the sense of like, it's like, okay, well, it's giving you a reason to kind of walk around the school and see and get a history of the people that were there.
That's good.
While also kind of having this fun time with a riddle and stuff. So.
Are we ever going to get out of playing Japanese games that take place in a school? I feel like half of the games that come on this podcast, they involve a school setting at some point. Maybe that's just us gravitating towards these games. I don't know, but
yeah.
It's just a really common
if it ain't broke, don't Japanese fix it, RPGs, I guess. Eh? Is that like, just, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's good. So how have you finished the game yet? No, not yet.
No. I'm gonna. I was probably half to three quarters of the way through. I think based on timing compared to the first game. So I'll pick that up again after my Final Fantasy 16 playthrough.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. Yeah, I hope to find some time for this in August. Maybe we can do like a follow up episode when you get through it. I've had a little bit of time with it myself. It's tough to make time for these big, you know, again, 20, 30, 40, RPGs, our RPGs, where there's just so much extra stuff that you want to do. Like the main story just always feels like to me as a small part of the experience. Like there's so much just walking around, doing the extra stuff, seeing everything.
Well, the thousands of mini games in those styles.
Oh yeah. Don't even get me started on that. It's true. Yeah. But I do want to play one of the, Yakuza Studio RGG kind of combat centered games before the next Like a Dragon game comes out I mentioned that as one very excited for coming up next year. So I'd like to do one of the combat ones before getting to that.
you also have a detective game that you've been playing.
I do, yeah. No beating people up. No, there is hilarious that there's a school setting, which I just finished that chapter last night. But yeah, so the game that I'm going to talk about, Master Detective Archives Rank Code, came out on June 30th. Kind of just snuck in there. Middle of summer stuff, you know, like obviously people were still playing Tears of the Kingdom. We had all the June announcements that came out. And then you had Final Fantasy, you had Diablo 4, you had a lot of big games come out. So this one kind of just sneaking in under the radar. And I hadn't fully realized that the game was a Switch exclusive till you brought that up, David. I was a little bit surprised by that. But yeah, Switch exclusive. This is from Spike Chunsoft. It has a lot of the people who worked on the Danganronpa games who have made this one. So and it totally shows, like within the first 30 minutes, you can tell like, this is, it's not Danganronpa, but it definitely feels, it has a lot of the same sensibilities, kind of being in that fantasy mystery type of genre, lots of adventure game elements as well. So the premise of Rank Code is that you are Detective Yuma Cocohead. The names only get better from there. They're definitely an all name team type of game. You are someone who has lost all their memories. You're amnesiac. You kind of wake up in the lost and found of a train station, and you have like a train ticket. You have like an invitation to go to this place on the other side of the train tracks, and so you get on the train, and then the kind of game kind of starts right away. You get right into the mystery element. The first chapter is called Chapter Zero. You meet some other detectives who are from this World Detective Organization. Supposedly you are one of them. You're kind of dressed like them, but you're kind of considered a trainee, I guess, compared to your colleagues who are master detectives. The hilarious thing about the first chapter, or that kind of introduction chapter, and it takes place before what's considered the prologue. So I wouldn't even call this spoilers. It's so early, but basically all the other master detectives on the train die, and you go right into like the first 20-30 minutes, you go right into the solving this mystery of what happened to them on this train that you're traveling on. So yeah, it just throws you right into the thick of things. There is a central mystery involved with the city that the train takes you to. It's referred to as Kanai Ward. And it's kind of run by this corporation, Amaterasu Corporation. It's always raining in this Kanai Ward city. There's these small areas that you're kind of exploring. And so you're trying to figure out what's happening in the city. It's kind of a police state. You have this force called the Peacekeepers, who kind of keep a tight leash on everybody. And they're trying to, I guess, you know, do their mysterious business behind the scenes. And so you're trying to solve, you know, what is the corporation up to? But then each chapter has its own kind of little mystery that you're solving as well. So you get off the train, you've solved that mystery. You meet this fellow who's also kind of formed his own little detective organization and has invited other members from the World Detective Organization to help him figure out what's happening in Kanai Ward in investigating this corporation. They refer to like this ultimate mystery that they keep coming back to, and you keep getting like little pieces of the puzzle of what might actually be happening here. The game has six chapters in total. I am at the beginning of chapter three, although because it's zero, prologue one and two. So I finished those parts. So I've started three. So three is actually like the fourth chapter of the game, I guess. And yeah, so you meet different people in every chapter. You have the first part of each chapter is kind of like more adventure game-ish. You're walking around a setting, talking to people, maybe doing side quests or just kind of exploring around. And then the main, when you're trying to advance the main story, it'll take you to kind of different areas of Kanai Ward, you know, like a tower, a church, clock tower, school, things like that. And so you'll advance the story there, meeting new people and stuff. After the kind of the main mystery of each chapter reveals itself, you go into kind of a more investigative mode. So you're kind of put into smaller spaces, smaller rooms, and you're looking around and trying to figure out, kind of collect clues that you're going to use later. So you collect these, there's some kind of key, I can't remember the name exactly, but you collect these keys, and then you use the keys later once you get to, the final third or second half of each chapter, where you're trying to figure out basically who did it, how did they do it, what exactly happened, kind of put all those pieces together. A few other ways that it's like a Danganronpa game is it has that writing. The game's fully voice acted, which is pretty good, and the voice acting is solid. There's lots of different characters. They're all kind of quirky and weird, and they all have their own like things that make them unique. So you like meeting new people. You like interacting with them because they're all different. Yuma is a little bit more blank slate-ish, obviously, you know, having amnesia. But he has this kind of sidekick type character, Shinigami, who appears as like a ghost for half of the chapter. And then when you get into like what it's called, they're like these mystery dungeons or mystery labyrinths. When you get in there and you're trying to actually solve the crime, that's where all the fantasy stuff kind of comes through. And so you're doing like these little mini games, you're answering questions, you're doing quick time events. You're actually, and this is very similar to like the trial sequences in Danganronpa, where there'll be like accusations or words kind of floating on the screen, and you have to chop them with your sword if they're false, or block away the noise ones that you're not supposed to pay attention to. And you use kind of the keys you've acquired from the investigation phase to you kind of use them in these pseudo battles to reject the things that the other culprits or potentially guilty parties are saying to you. So I'd say the second half of each chapter is very, very reminiscent of Danganronpa, whereas the first one, you have a little bit more freedom to kind of look around, and it does feel a little bit more like a detective story as opposed to a, I guess like a school or relationship building story. There aren't really relationships to build in this game. That's another departure, I guess. You don't kind of like spend 3 hours or three, like, you know, points, talking or interacting with people in the area. You're kind of free to just spend however you want the first half of the chapter. But yeah, it's really good. David, I don't know if you've heard anything about this game, or do you know anyone playing it? Like, is this the first time you're kind of getting anything of this game?
I remember seeing it. I feel like it was in a direct last year where it was announced. I remember seeing it announced, but it hasn't really gotten much. Like, I've heard a couple of people talking about it. Like, I know it's funny, I mentioned Retronauts, and I know Bob Mackie on a previous episode said that he was specifically buying it because it was done by the Danganronpa people. But other than that, I haven't really heard much about it. Like, even social media wise, not a whole lot of people talking about it. Other than I heard, like, the few things I have heard, I've heard it was good. So,
yeah. So I think, a couple of reasons I think that might be is the game is very long. Maybe longer than people have expected. And so people might have got the codes late. We got a launch day code. I know some sites did get a code a little bit earlier than we did. I don't know how much lead time they had, but I wouldn't be surprised if we got a bunch of reviews coming out for the game this month. Our review will be up hopefully in the next week or so. But yeah, I think that could be part of it. I think, again, June was just such a busy month with a lot of big titles. So this one just didn't have the marketing behind it. Maybe that's a Spike Chunsoft thing. I don't know. I imagine they published it as well. Publisher Spike Chunsoft. So yeah, maybe it's just a June thing, you know, release it and not too much fanfare. I'm not sure, but I think the game's quite good. Like, I am into it. I think some of the sequences last a little bit longer than they should. It does feel like there's not padding, but just like moments where like that you're getting just so much dialogue and so much story, and where I wonder if they could pare it down a little bit to make the game a little bit more better paced. But yeah, I like it. I think it's fun. I think that, again, if you like Danganronpa, you're probably going to like this game too, as long as like you're not hung up on the relationship building aspect, which isn't really a part of this. More on Shinigami though. So she's a ghost that kind of follows you around. You apparently have signed some pact with her, which is kind of under wraps a little bit, at least to this point in the story, which I think is about halfway through the game. She kind of guides you a little bit, but she's also like making fun of you and like, you know, always quipping about things, you know. So there's a lot of banter coming from her. Yuma's a little bit more kind of straight laced and, you know, trying to be the, you know, kind of plucky good guy type. For example, like, so the previous chapter 2, it takes place in all girls high school. And so she's constantly referring to this one girl who's asked you for help as like uggo and flat chested and just making fun of her. Like, she's kind of jealous, I guess Shinigami is, because she kind of straddles the line between being like interested in you and like constantly teasing you, but also like horny and, you know, obsessed with like death. Like, she's a death god, I guess. So she loves like these mysteries, and they really get her going, get her excited. And so the funny thing is, in the latter half of each chapter, when you go into these mystery labyrinths, she transforms like a Sailor Moon type transformation sequence. It really is. And the game does a lot of like references to other things, like referring to Danganronpa, referring to other Japanese games like the Dragon Quest series. She uses a spell to like warp you to the beginning of an area, and it's Zoom, but it's S-O like asterisk M, right? So you know it's Zoom, but it kind of even makes the sound like the sound effect from the Dragon Quest games too. So it's quite funny. But yeah, she transforms into this like fairly scantily clad, like, you know, anime looking girl. And it's just, it's funny. Like you pull a sword that you use for the dungeon sequences. You pull the sword out of her mouth. There's one mini game where she's in a barrel, kind of in her bikini, and you're like shooting knives at the barrel to knock like the letters off to spell a word. Again, totally Danganronpa stuff. Like all the kind of post investigation mini games that you play to solve the murder, to solve the mystery, all those mini games feel taken straight out of like Monokuma's type mini games that he gives you in Danganronpa. So the half of this game is going to feel so familiar to Danganronpa fans, you know, including like the pink blood that's used when there's a death scene or something like that, or someone's poisoned, they're like, you know, kind of barfing out pink blood. Yeah, but I don't know, like I like the game. It has a darkness to it, because, you know, there's obviously a lot of murder and death, and some of the main antagonists seem particularly brutal when you meet more of the kind of the heads of the peacekeepers and as people working for Amaterasu. You see kind of like, okay, these guys, they they're no nonsense. They mean business, and they're pretty dark and deceitful and all that stuff. So you get a good touch of like levity with the conversations between some of the characters. But then, you know, when you see kind of the villains and who's behind the scenes, kind of puppet masters, they seem pretty dark. So I like that blend that's going on. I just feel like the pace is maybe a little bit slow, and it's tough in the summer when you kind of want to get through a bunch of games, and it's not that it's a slog or something like that, but I guess I wish it was a little bit quicker though. That's all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is, even just like, it's funny you say that about December, because it does feel like I know just playing Final Fantasy 16 now, it feels like I'm not able to devote as much time to video games, just with stuff the kids are doing and, just in the heat too can kind of be irritating when you're trying to play and stuff.
Well, I get sleepy, I close my eyes more because there's just so much reading, you know, like it's almost a tough time to play games like this where you do get a little bit more tired or the heat is a little bit more of an issue. This feels like maybe a better suited game to something like November or December, when like it's kind of dark outside, you want to read something kind of chilling, mystery type story, you know, then you play something like this. June 30th seems an odd release date for a game called Rain Code, where the central city, Kanai Ward, it's raining constantly. So it's always dark, it's always rainy. Yeah, so the main area, whenever you're exploring, you're walking around, it's constantly raining, and then I'm looking outside, and it's super sunny outside. It's just a weird contrast, you know? So
yeah,
I wonder if this would be better as a fall or a winter type game or something like that. But that could be.
I think they would have delayed it just in general, just based on all the stuff that's come out between, like, I know Breath of the Wild came out in May, but I mean, it still had a long tail. And then with Final Fantasy and Diablo both coming out, I would have thought that they would have pushed back. I guess once you've made the number, like once you made the date, maybe, and it's a Switch exclusive, so maybe there was something, some kind of deal they had to make with Nintendo for the date or something.
That's possible. But yeah.
You just really wonder if it's like, well, an end of September or even early October seems like a better time for this, because I don't think Nintendo necessarily, or anyone, it just doesn't feel like there's any big games coming out. Like maybe Starfield, I guess, is September, but.
Yeah, the thing is, now that Nintendo's had their presentation, like, we know Mario Wonder's coming October, like, there's it's tough to slot a game like this in now. Like, I can see why you'd want to release in the summer to maybe stay away from some of the big fall hitters that always happen around, like, Black Friday and stuff, but this just happened to be a June that was just filled with big games or continuation of games from May. And so, they probably penciled this in not knowing when Final Fantasy 16 was coming, or when maybe before Diablo 4 had a firm release date or something like that. You know, like it's tough, and it is a very different game from those. I understand that, but you think about it, it's also a game that like maybe people would want to play on the side, play in addition to something else. So for it to be really beefy as well, just a lot of things that don't, to me, don't coincide with summer. You know, the theming, the atmosphere, the length of the chapters, it doesn't lend itself well to a June 30th release date. But I do hope that like more people play it at some point.
Because I know it's funny, we talked about AI, like the Somnium Files, they were both released in June, like of the respective years. Yeah, and I feel exactly. Like at the time, people just, it was one of those games that didn't pick up until later when people started talking about it. And there was really no fanfare when they came out, even though they were amazing games.
And they had some good sales on that one too, right? Like I've seen, remember the AI games getting some steep discounts, like, at least the first game before the second one came out was like 80 or 90% off. Do you remember that? Like it was super cheap. Like you had to buy it.
That's when it got popular is when I don't think anybody bought it when it first came out in June. And then it went on like a huge sale. I want to say October, November. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, like everybody was talking about it. And because I remember at the time thinking like, yes, finally people are like realizing I've been a game.
Maybe that's their play here, is that you release this game and the diehard fans are going to buy it at launch, and then you seasonally, when it makes more sense to play a game like this, maybe that's when you go, you do your full marketing, your discounts, your sales, and all that stuff. And
yeah, it might be like one of those ones where you put it on sale for the like right before the holidays, and that's when it gets picked up or something.
I mean, this is a Halloween game. It's either a Halloween game or like a cold winter's night game. That's what it feels like to me, especially like, you know, Vancouver, you know, we're used to a lot of rain and we haven't had rain for like weeks here, and I'm playing a game where it's raining constantly. It's just a funny, like I said, it's a funny contrast. And I wonder if the timing is going to the reason why we're just not hearing a lot about this game. But I do hope that people play it. I think it's going to be good. I think the central mystery is starting to pick up a little bit more as I kind of, at the end of each chapter, they kind of give you some tidbits about what's actually happening. And I'm still meeting new characters. I'm still like, the dungeon experiences are still changing, that they're adding kind of new mini games, new wrinkles to them. There's just so much kind of slapstick comedy and the interactions with Shinigami when she transforms. And I don't know. It's kind of just wild to me. I'm just like kind of replaying it all over in my head. And I love some of the ending sequences of the chapter. Like you get kind of really pumped up as you get close to solving that mystery and figuring out exactly how it went down. There's one thing I was going to bring up as well. The game kind of introduced this in the last chapter, an interesting kind of moral dilemma of, you know, being the detective and you want to solve the crime, you want to find the truth. Like it's kind of their motto. But what happens in these labyrinths is that once you solve the crime and you figure out who did it and you accuse them and that you know you've confirmed that, they die in the real world. So there's this kind of juxtaposition of Yuma's feelings of like, yes, like I solved the mystery, I feel good about that, but then knowing that someone is going to die just and they're guilty and you know maybe they did something wrong, maybe it was an accident, whatever. However, the circumstances, their punishment is death, right? And so he gets kind of like apprehensive and just feeling maybe ambivalent about that. And of course, then you have Shinigami on the other side who's like, yeah, I'll kill them all. Like she's really into that. You know, that kind of punishment. And she's the one who kind of dishes out the death. So, yeah, I love the characters. I think the setting is good. The main story seems to be picking up. So
I just watched the transformation video.
Yeah, it's
on
hilarious, right?
That is like,
it's totally Sailor Moon. It's exactly.
Oh,
Sailor
yes.
Moon,
it's right? almost like. Second for second.
So there's a lot of those like references to kind of Japanese media properties and games in particular that comes out of the dialogue too. So I love all that stuff. You know, I grew up with watching Sailor Moon and other cartoons, and so to see that kind of represented in this game, which was great. And I thought, you know, thinking maybe I might miss Monokuma. I think he's a really great character in the Danganronpa games, but I think they've done a good job of replacing him and not feeling like, oh, you miss him or you miss that kind of central antagonist. They do a good job of like, you know, you are more of a detective here. You're not just someone trapped on an island trying to figure out what this game is and kind of trying to kill time a little bit. There you have a little bit more of a driving force in this game than some of the Danganronpa games. So I'm liking that too.
That's good.
Yeah, it's a good one.
I just wish it wasn't a Switch exclusive, but...
Yeah, I mean, and again,
might have to dust it off, I guess. And
we talked about this. It might not stay that way because
it might be a timed exclusive.
It could be timed, like 6 months or a year or something. It's
I'd love to play it on Steam Deck.
The performance is fine. I think it just looks quite muddy. I'm playing it mostly handheld as I do. And yeah, some of the scenes look, and again, it's dark and it's raining. So you get a lot of these muddy kind of scenes. So for that to carry over in the visual style as well, the cutscenes are great. The character art is great. But then in game, like kind of the 3D sprites and just what you're seeing minute to minute, it does look a little bit washed out. So yeah, that is something that could definitely be improved on a Steam Deck or a PS5 or something like that. So we'll see if it comes to some other platforms. And if the game doesn't sell well, I could see them maybe wanting to port it over and see if they can bolster the sales too. So that could be an option. Yeah, but that is Master Detective Archives Raincode. We also talked about Lost Judgment. David's playing that. Hopefully I'll be able to get into that soon. I think we'll call it an episode here. You can reach David at thethirstymage.com with your emails. You can find us on your podcast apps. We're on Spotify. You know, leave us a review. Leave us some questions there. That'd be fantastic. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/thethirstymage. All of that would be fantastic. You know, we love to get new listeners. We've got a Discord. David, how do people get on the Discord again?
I think the easiest way would probably go to thethirstymage.com, and there's a link for the Discord right in the middle.
It always makes me happy when I log into Discord so seldom, but every time I do and I see new people have joined, and I'm like, oh, that's good. You know, there people are picking up, finding the podcast, finding the mention of Discord, and joining our ever-growing Thirsty Mage army. So that's a good thing.
It's a great community, very supportive, very good conversation.
Obviously, you know, we've been talking about some of the big games of the summer, but if people have some smaller titles that they want to hear about, or maybe something flew under our radar, we'd love if you gave us a shout on Twitter, or again, gave the email address for David. I'm at RiskMan64 on Twitter. David, you prefer people kind of reach out to the Thirsty Mage handle or your own handle?
It's either one. It's easy. It's probably easier if you go at the Thirsty Mage.
Yeah.
We actually just had a shout out. One of our listeners asking if we'll do an episode on the best Sid rendition.
Oh yes, was that Matt?
Yeah.
By the way, I saw I made a tweet about that today too.
Pretty solid Sid in Final Fantasy 16. I'll just say that right now. So
we might have to do this. The ultimate Sid off. That might be. Yeah. That might be something.
We'll have to wait for you to play the Sid part though in FF16, so that you have. You have the full Sid experience in the new game before comparing, you know, some of the great Sids of the past.
He's been getting some high praise, so I think I might just have to do that. I was going to ask another game that I've been kind of thinking about, and I know it's a long one, but Final Fantasy X-2, does that have a Sid in it? Because I believe X
got to have a Sid in it.
It's got to be right. So if it does, that's one I've been just kind of personally wanting to revisit. I reviewed. You, if you remember, we each took one of those. I reviewed 10, you reviewed 10 too, years ago on Switch. But I have been wanting to, I've been jonesing to kind of play 10 too for some reason. So,
well, now I'm also curious. Do we include Cindy? I think it's Cindy from Final Fantasy 15. I know there was an actual Cid in Final Fantasy 15, but I feel like Cindy was the true Cid.
Yeah, we might have to throw in both of them in the list and see where they pop up, but. Yeah. Okay, Sid off. Yeah, that's definitely. So there you go. See, someone made a suggestion.
I've confirmed on the wiki that there is a Sid in Final Fantasy X2.
Fantastic. Okay, so it sounds like that. Yeah, lock it in. I definitely.
Non-playable character in the Xanarcan Ruins.
That's fine. That's good. Yeah. Yeah. So I want to do that. So there's another reason to get back into more of our favorite series of games. And yeah, I'd like to get to 16. Maybe in August or September or something like that. I'm a little bit less busy in the fall, so that's always a good time to revisit some of the games I've missed. But I say that, and I'm like, oh, Starfield's coming out like in September too. So
right.
Yeah, so we'll see. But please hit us up on Twitter or by email. Let us know what kind of episodes you want to hear or games you want us to cover. We're always open to suggestions there too. But I think that'll do us for this week. So thanks, everybody, for listening, and hope you have a great rest of your day. Bye.
Bye.